Good morning, 640 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News, and joining us now by phone, we have Hill Goodspeed, who is no longer the National Naval Aviation Museum historian. He has been promoted to being the deputy director, which still includes being mostly the historian. Hill, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News. It's been a minute.
Good morning, Andrew. Yeah, it has been. Good to talk with you again.
Congratulations on the promotion, by the way. I literally didn't know until like 3 minutes ago. So that's fantastic. Hey, the reason I called you is because, and you and I had talked a little bit last week, is because there was an interesting anniversary. On last week, you had the 100th anniversary of the first Goodyear blimp, right?
Yes, and Goodyear has a long tie with naval aviation, and a lot of people don't know that the Navy operated blimps for many years. As a matter of fact, the first one the Navy ever bought was one called the DN-1, not built by Goodyear, and it actually made its only flights, which consisted of about one, I believe, before it crashed, here in Pensacola. So, you know, Pensacola has so many milestones in naval aviation history, and it was actually the location of the Navy's first ever blimp flight. So luckily, the ones built by Goodyear were a lot more successful and a lot longer serving in naval aviation.
So we had basically one here, which was not auspicious. that's fine. But the I think it was Thursday, am I right? It was the 3rd of July was the 100th anniversary of the first Goodyear blimp. Is that right?
I believe you're correct, yeah.
And the reason I wanted to talk to you was because as somebody who's a, you know, naval aviation enthusiast and is always sending me various information about things that happen and has said, Andrew, you should pay attention. This is kind of interesting. And I was like, the Goodyear blimp, why is that interesting? And he said, no, read the article. And I read the article and I was stunned to discover what something I kind of knew but had never really put, you know, 3 and 8 together to get 11. And in this case, I did. And I thought, oh, my God, we should definitely have you on to talk about this because blimps in naval aviation history, especially World War II, and, of course, we're a naval aviation history town, in World War II were massively important, right?
They absolutely were. And what the Navy did during World War II in the early stage, I mean, Goodyear really built blimps for the Navy and in the interwar years as well. So leading up to World War II, the Navy had a lot of experience operating blimps, free balloons, and also the dirigibles like the Hindenburg-type rigid airships, which operated in naval aviation in the 20s and 30s. They were not very successful because of accidents, but the actual blimps built by Goodyear were very active in World War II, and primarily it was, even though they operated on both the West Coast and the East Coast and into Central America, and there were also some bases overseas in French Morocco, actually. Huh. And what their primary role was anti-submarine warfare. And if anyone's familiar with World War II, the Battle of the Atlantic was a real test of the United States and Great Britain and other allies, the ability to get personnel and material across the Atlantic to support the campaigns in Europe. And, of course, crossing the Atlantic, they had to go through the onslaught of German U-boats. And one thing that really kept the U-boats at bay was air cover for the convoys. So once the convoys got out of range of air cover, they became a lot more vulnerable to U-boats. But one thing about the blimps is that they could stay aloft much longer than conventional aircraft. So when you had blimps overflying the convoys, even though they weren't real effective at attacking U-boats, even though they carried depth charges, just the fact that they were there and could see a wide range of water around the convoy, it offered a lot more reconnaissance that enabled the convoys to cross the Atlantic more successfully. So they were very, very important in that role, and there were blimp bases scattered all over the place. And it was a really effective way to provide anti-submarine warfare for convoys.
So just because, again, this was news to me. It was interesting to me, and I think the scale of this program in American history is probably lost on some people. Am I right that we had upwards of 150 Goodyear-made blimps operating in support of naval aviation and support of primarily protecting shipping convoys during World War II? Am I in the right vicinity for the number?
Yes. absolutely are. It was, and they were all from the initial batch that they procured were the actual famous Goodyear blimps. And there's one famous one I'll tell you about in a second. But so then they procured them from Goodyear, and that's in those great numbers. And they endured. They built blimps for the Navy, and they operated into the 1960s.
But you're telling me about there was one particular one.
Well, there's one particularly famous Goodyear blimp. It's called the L8, and we actually have the control car for it at the museum, and it's popularly known as the Ghost Ship. It was procured by the Navy early on in World War II, and it was it performed a notable flight in April 1942 when the Doolittle Raiders left the West Coast, Alameda, to head out on board USS Hornet to head to bomb Japan. The L-8 actually flew out above and flew above Hornet and dropped vital supplies for that mission for the aircraft. And then later in August of 1942, the two-man crew flew out off the coast of California, and they reported seeing an oil slick, and they descended to check the oil slick out. And then that was the last radio communication from the airship. And next thing you know, in a little town called Daly City, California, this L-8 blimp descends and makes a crash landing in the middle of town, and there's no trace of the two men on board. And to this day, it's a mystery of what happened to them. And
weird.
So that control car for the Ghost Ship is on display in the museum.
Huh. I had no idea. I mean, I didn't know that history of the weirdness of the ending of it, but also its participation in the Doolittle Raid. I mean, it's one of the, most, in my mind, significant early achievements of naval aviation to put those B-25s up on that, straight deck and attack Japan to retaliate for Pearl Harbor and, at least let them know that they were not invulnerable to us. That's amazing. I have questions about the operation, though. So for whatever reason in my brain, I think of a blimp as being tethered rather than flying independently. Were these blimps tethered with the ships, or did they accompany them and fly independently above them?
They flew independently.
Okay.
Now, early on, they were called free balloons, and those would be tethered to ships.
Okay.
But blimps like the Goodyear blimps operated independently. They would be when they were on land, they were either in a hangar or they had a nose cone that would be affixed to the nose of the airship envelope or the gas bag, I guess is the best way to describe it.
Sure.
And they would be moored to mooring masts. And then when they launched them, they would just be freed from those mooring masts, and then they would operate independently. So it was quite an operation to actually land, launch them. There are all sorts of videos on YouTube that you can see, historic films that the Navy produced. When they would descend, they'd have these lines that the crew would throw from them from the control car, and there would be sailors on the ground who would grab those lines and bring the airship down, and then they would moor it to the mooring mast.
Yeah, I was just thinking how the term airship is really a much more appropriate description for it, especially when you talk about launching and recovering. So they would travel the entire Atlantic over to England along with the convoys?
They could. They had the capacity to do that, sometimes they would just hand them over, to other aircraft. But they did have the ability to cross the Atlantic, and that's what they routinely did. Or in the case of the Caribbean, they would fly out over the Caribbean and cover the convoys for a certain period of time, and then return to their bases.
And my understanding my understanding was part of the advantage of them was very easy to resupply. Just the ships would carry the resupply, that they didn't need to, like if you're trying to refuel planes, obviously midair, this is a major logistical effort that we do these days. We didn't really have that capability back then, but, resupply them from the ship so they could basically go forever as long as they had ships that could help them. And then they would serve to protect the ships by being the eyes in the sky to look down. And like you say, you tell me if I get any of this wrong, I'm just kind of talking it through in my head. But that they would be able to see submarines, which was enough of a deterrent to the submarines that they didn't want to be seen. They'd rather go where they can't be seen. And is it right that there were no ships lost that had airship cover? Is that right?
I've heard that before. I couldn't verify if it was totally accurate, but I have heard that statement before. But certainly you could say it was the risk was greatly diminished.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And visibility, it's not like they could really see the U-boats submerged, although later on the Goodyear blimps, or the blimps built by Goodyear, would carry pretty, you know, pretty good sonar equipment and everything that they could detect submerged submarines.
Got it.
You know, submarines created in World War II, they were very slow underwater, but they were a lot faster on the surface. So the U-boats would try to make approaches on the surface when they could. But when you had these airships overhead, they could detect them surfacing, and it would detract from their ability to close in on the convoys as quickly as they would have liked to.
Oh, okay. So that makes more sense, because I was trying to think, like, you can't really see that far down into the water, even from up above. Especially if it's any kind of conditions, but if they're much more on the surface than they are submerged, that makes, you know, because now you have a much greater visibility from up in the air looking across. So no, just fascinating. And again, a whole slice of naval aviation history that I did not know. Are the men who served on these airships, are they historically considered naval aviators? Are they winged? Were they trained at NAS Pensacola? Tell me about that slice of it.
Yes, they were actually. It's the free balloon pilots for a period of time. It's sort of humorous, actually. They were awarded half wings, so they had the shield and the wing on the side, because their balloons were not necessarily powered.
Got it. Okay.
But the airship pilots went through a specialized training course. Primarily, I mean, in World War I, some of the first ones were actually trained in Akron, Ohio, where the Goodyear plant
sure,
was.
That makes sense.
But primarily, they were trained in Lakehurst, New Jersey. They were considered full-fledged naval aviators. Just you were either a naval aviator back then, a naval aviator HTA, which is heavier than air, which is a conventional aircraft, or you were a naval aviator LTA, which is lighter than air, and that would be those were the airship pilots. But yes, they had full-fledged naval aviator wings, and they were definitely considered naval aviators.
And somebody said, I think it was Z is the designation for the squadrons that were for the lighter than air. Like H is for helicopters, V is for heavier than air, and Z for like Zeppelin is the lighter than air. Is that right?
That's correct. So most of the squadrons were ZP, which was
okay.
Airship patrol.
Interesting. No, it is absolutely fascinating. I didn't really know any of it, and that's why I wanted to have you on, because I figured people would find that, a very interesting thing. Well, Hill Goodspeed, he is the deputy director of the Naval Aviation Museum. Oh, and you guys, just before we let you go, Hill, you've got a new exhibit coming, right, in August? Is that right?
In September, we're planning on a formal opening in September in conjunction with POW MIA Day, and it's a brand new Vietnam prisoner of war exhibit, very interactive. It can walk through it, and it recreates the Hanoi Hilton down to original bricks and an original concrete slab bed from the actual Hanoi Hilton in North Vietnam. A lot of reminiscences of POWs, and it's going to be something else. Quite a tribute to those incredible Americans that endured so much in the prison camps of North Vietnam. So
wow.
Definitely that's our horizon this fall. Look for that to open at the onboard the air station at the museum.
Oh, wow. That sounds, I mean, amazing. I think the immersive kind of, like, there's a World War II museum. I'm trying to remember if it was the one in New Orleans or if it's a different one, but where you walk through the history of World War I, you walk through the history of, you know, World War II, and that kind of experience is very interesting. And I imagine that will definitely give us a different perspective on what it would have meant to be a POW during Vietnam. I knew I had one last, like, a detail-y thing. Were they helium-filled or were they hydrogen-filled or were they something else? What were they in World War II?
They were helium.
Okay.
The famous Hindenburg crash.
Right.
They were filled with hydrogen. That was flammable. So, but the lighter than air, the blimps were helium filled.
Because I mean, that was a relatively early development as they realized we can't keep doing this with the hydrogen. So, okay, I just wanted to make sure by World War II it had fixed. So, very good. Well, Hill, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I really appreciate you being available and always such good information. Hill Goodspeed, former historian and now deputy director / historian for the Naval Aviation Museum. Sir, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Andrew. Enjoyed it. Have a great day.
Absolutely.